It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. We've got lots of news, including a really cool, I hope they do this, new Microsoft mobile device. Hey, at least they patented it. We're also going to talk about Windows 10. Another update for the Insider's Ring. We're getting close to the Creator's update. Some interesting new features and a screen grab of the new Xbox UI. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 501, recorded Wednesday, January 18th, 2017. Nomentum. Windows Weekly is brought to you by WordPress. WordPress powers 27% of sites on the web, more than any other platform. And now, it's easy to get started with a 27% off premium or business plan at wordpress.com/windows. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process. It's completely online at quickenloans.com/windows. And by Carbonite. Keep your business safe this year. Protect your business from ransomware and hacker attacks with automatic cloud backup from Carbonite. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use the offer code Windows to get 2 free bonus months if you decide to buy. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we, the 501 Buttonfly Straight-Legged Edition, where we talk about the latest from Microsoft. Paul Thurrott, the king of the buttonfly, he is here. I don't know. Did you ever wear as a kid? You guys were too young, probably.
No, I had buttonfly jeans.
Yeah. Did you ever wear sailor pants, though, with the button flap?
No.
Okay, maybe just me. That's Mary Jo Foley laughing at me, as usual. She's from allaboutmicrosoft.com. Paul is from Thurrott.com. Together, they comprise two of the best-connected, most astute Windows watchers in the world at large. And they join us. We are so lucky. They join us every week at this time to talk about Windows. Hello.
Hello, Leo.
Hello. Thank you, Paul. Didn't feel right without that. Let's see. Paul's already on the gin and tonic, so let's just get right into it.
The sweet taste of pine in the afternoon.
You know, my wife gave me for Christmas this great like gin and tonic kit with two bottles of gin and all these exotic tonics. And I thought, when am I going to use this? I can't wait to, but when? Soon.
It's like a holiday party in your mouth.
Right now. I love the G&T. Sure. I know you guys are the beer guys, but I'm the G&T guy. Microsoft might, could be, have a new mobile device planned. Didn't we talk about this last week?
Yeah, but we didn't know anything about what it might be.
So you mean it's not just some fevered fantasy, some fevered fanboy fantasy?
Oh, no, it's a fevered fantasy.
Oh.
the question is, will they make it?
Yeah.
Right.
Even
right.
Fever fantasies sometimes get fulfilled. Mm-hmm. It's the fulfillment of a fevered fanboy fantasy. Next on Windows Weekly.
Yep.
Let's see if I can extend the alliteration a little longer. Mm-hmm. So what is it? Is it going to be a phone? You say device. Is it a tablet?
Right. Well, it looks like a foldable phone that could become a mini tablet.
I love this idea.
Based on a patent application discovered by MS Power User.
But what do we learn from patents, really?
I know. That's the trick.
We learned Surface Studio 6 months before it came out.
Really?
It's true.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's true.
The entire design of that thing was in the patent.
Okay.
And here's another connection. The guy who patented the hinge for Surface Studio is also the guy patenting the hinge on this device.
Ooh.
So you know when it closes, there's going to be like this huge hole in the middle.
That you could put a pen in or something.
Yeah.
Ooh.
No, so there are a lot of images from this patent. And the application of the patent dates back to 2014. And it just became public, I think, in the past few days. So make of it what you will. But it looks like something that could fold up almost like a book. And when it's open, look like a little mini tablet.
Ooh.
And it also has a kickstand that lets you tent it, unless that's just another possible variation of a device. Like you said, Leo, what you see in patent applications, it's not always clear. It's not like, hey, here's a device. There's like all these kind of, it could look like this, it could look like this. There may be different kinds of, what do they call them, housings. So we can't say it exactly looks like this, but it's intriguing.
Interesting. Intriguing, even.
Very.
And
very.
Something, and every, and I don't blame the fanboys' furor because it's a fantastic phone. It would be really wonderful to have. I mean, this is a dream come true, is it not?
Pretty cute.
It's a dream. I'll give you that.
I have to say I don't credit patent applications generally because
I know.
Any company worth its salt patents stuff, not even because they're going to make it, just because they don't want anybody else to make it, right?
Right.
But remember, you know, there was a video that Microsoft posted a few years ago. It was called Future Vision 2020, back from 2013. And they showed a phone-like device that had two screens. And in the video, you could actually pop them apart. But they also worked as like a folding thing, or as you could put them together for one big screen.
Yeah.
And you could kind of imagine that this is maybe the first step toward that kind of futuristic device.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very...
It's a courier-ish kind of a thing.
It is a little bit like a courier, or maybe a new and improved Surface Mini type device, perhaps?
Yeah, it's absolutely... You can imagine it being a continuum type device, right, where the screen or the display adapts depending on the configuration of the screen.
Mm-hmm. And the patent, the exact patent name is Mobile Computing Device Having a Flexible Hinge Structure.
A flexible hinge structure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of this patent is about the hinge.
Yeah.
And how it works,
well,
and how
you
it
have,
folds. And,
so is it dual screen or – see, Samsung also showed something, a concept
right.
device,
mm-hmm.
with a bendy screen. And they were really pushing the bendable OLED thing, right?
Yeah.
This looks like more of a two-screen thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, like a courier.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. A small courier. I like it. I mean, I liked the Samsung concept view. Did we show that here? I think we did.
I think we did. I kind of like, you know, in the form factor, that thing is kind of like a little square.
Yeah.
And it looks like the type of thing that would fit really nicely in a front pocket.
Yeah, but give you a tablet should you need
it. And then, right, turn it into like a phablet or a small tablet.
And that's the advantage of a single screen solution is when mm-hmm. it becomes a tablet, it really is too, you know, it's all unified up kind of thing.
Right. Right.
You don't have a bezel to get in the way of your... Mm-hmm. Swipes.
Yeah.
It's apparently LG, Samsung, and Google have similar patents. So that's good. Maybe this is the next big thing, the next form factor.
Yeah.
The big question for me when I saw it is what operating system will it run? Because my guess is Windows on ARM, the thing that's coming in the fall, not Windows Mobile, right?
Right.
Or that's Windows Phone OS.
Yep.
And then if it does run that, that's good news because at least in theory, you can run 132 apps and emulation on that. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, I think Paul was the one who said on Twitter when this all broke, okay, but it doesn't get around the problem of where are the apps, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, there's a really cool phone. It can run UWP apps. Oh, where are the UWP apps? Oh.
Yeah, there's a contingent of our, you know, kind of fan base out there, the Microsoft fan base, who just wants to see another. They just want some hardware to get excited about. And I hate to be the guy with a bucket of cold water, but you know, doesn't solve the central problem with Windows 10 Mobile, right? I mean, the app thing is just an insurmountable issue. It doesn't matter how cool the thing is, you know, if you can't run any apps on it, it's no one's going to bother with it.
Well,
right.
Well, but it has to start somewhere, and if I think starting with a cool device is a good place to start.
It's not really starting anywhere. This is like the seventh generation of the software. Like, it just hasn't taken off. Like, you know, a cool device isn't going to do it, you know. But a cool new kind of device running a successful operating system is actually a little more interesting. It doesn't solve, you know, I know it doesn't solve the phone issue, but it's, you know, Microsoft has established a kind of an interesting niche with this Continuum stuff. And I think it's most effective today on PCs, where you can transform a tablet into a PC and vice versa. But, you know, HP is marketing a Windows 10 mobile device as kind of a 3-in-1. And you can kind of see this as the logical extension of that, but just a 3-in-1 that actually runs PC software people want to run.
Yeah, put WOA on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if it does have WOA on it, I'm betting we won't see this till 2018.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really? That's right. So WOA is Windows on ARM, and that's official. We know about that.
Right.
Yeah. We also know it's not happening till the end of the year, to begin with, right? Okay. So that would be the very earliest.
Okay. I would think so, too. Yeah. And remember, last year we were starting, when we were still hearing tips from various tipsters about Surface Phone, they were starting to hint this might not be a 2017 thing. They were like, maybe it's a 2018 thing. So right. I'm more inclined to think if they do this, it won't. We know there's going to, or we believe, I should say, there's going to be a hardware launch this spring. This will not be in that hardware launch. It's too early for that.
If it's based on ARM, yeah, right.
Right, right. Yeah. Right. So and I think next year.
Maybe a preemptive strike. They'd show a concept thing saying we're working on this. I don't know. But then nobody would buy.
Yeah. I know. It's such a weird chicken egg problem.
Yeah.
It is.
Although they're in a good position, because it's not like they're killing a very brisk market. So, in fact, this might be the time to reassure everybody.
Well,
and say
they do have partners, though. I mean, you don't want to throw them under the
HP
bus.
HP is the only. Right.
That's no, I mean, there are other companies making Windows phones, but I mean, none of them are.
And people making small tablets, too. And you can bet they're trying to line up OEMs right now to build Windows on ARM PCs and tablets. Right, so if they show this, like, hey, look what we're going to make, then everybody's like, oh, why am I going to buy from Dell or Fujitsu or whoever, right?
Right.
Yep.
Makes sense.
Yep.
Sadly.
I know. Sadly. Yep. Yep.
Okay, if you insist. Yeah. And what is the stat lately on Windows, the Windows Store? Because the Windows Store includes all UWP apps, right? So it would be desktop as well as mobile. Is that right or no?
Yeah,
on the back end, but you don't really see the mobile apps when you're on a PC,
so you
right?
You see what's appropriate to your hardware.
Yeah.
Right. But we don't know. You know, just today I was writing a story about how Slack just brought their universal client to Windows 10, and they built it using the Centennial Bridge, and they also have a new tool for bringing over Electron apps to the Windows Store. And I was trying to find a number to say, and there are blah, blah, blah number of apps in the Windows Store. No, there's no number.
Nope.
We haven't had a number
dozens.
In like two
I think
years.
We can use that.
Yeah.
Dozens and dozens of apps.
Yeah. So we don't know how many UWP apps there are in the store. We know that Microsoft keeps saying they're cleaning up the store. They're taking out duplicates. They're taking out irrelevant apps. So we don't know what the new total is. And you don't hear as many announcements as you did even a year ago about, oh, so-and-so is bringing their app to the store. You just don't hear that anymore. So that's a problem. Even Microsoft, they're building versions of their own Office apps that are going to be UWP apps, but they don't exist in the store yet. So,
wait a minute. I'm sorry. Their Office apps are in the store, actually. UWP.
Are they UWP? Oh, yeah. They are? Oh, I didn't think they were yet. Yeah. Oh, no. I meant the full 132 versions brought over with Centennial. Sorry.
No, sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
The Touch First apps are in the Office. Store. Not the.
Yeah.
Not
the Touch. The. Sorry. Yeah. But I'm wondering about the real full-fledged, all features included version that's coming over to the store. Yeah,
right.
It's probably the case that all mobile stores and stores of this app stores, I guess I'll say, of this type have their share of junk apps that wrap web pages, things like that. But when you have a store with scant new quality stuff, that stuff really shows up more. And it really feels like Somebody in the chat room said it's just a wasteland of junk apps. And that's what really hurts you. Without the quality apps, what do you see?
There have been little pushes. You know, there's been some Centennial action, which is kind of interesting. There's been a number of games this year that are actually high quality, you know, Tomb Raider, Gears of War, ReCore, and so forth.
Are those mostly Microsoft Studios things? Or?
Yep. Yeah, they are. But
You would expect them, at least, right?
Microsoft's but that never happened in the past. Right. I mean, you know, it's – I don't know. You know, this is a horrible problem that doesn't have an easy solution, unfortunately.
I know. It is a total chicken and egg. Developers say, I'd build for it if there was an audience. And until there's an audience, nobody's building for it. And so then the store just – all you ever hear anymore is, oh, we're not going to do a Windows Phone app. You know, we're just going to tell people to go to the web, right?
It's the broken window problem. You got to get rid of the squeegee men. And then you can – you know what I'm saying? The broken window problem. I think this is Malcolm Gladwell. Or no, it's – predictably irrational. It's the theory, and Giuliani was the one to do this in New York City, that you got to clean up the little crime, the little messes, and then people will start coming back. But what you have essentially right now in the Windows App Store is the equivalent of an inner city. with blighted buildings, and you've got to start cleaning it up with, fix the broken windows.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know how that translates. Maybe getting rid of some of those crap apps.
They've tried. Yeah. This has just been a problem since Windows Phone, frankly. I mean, this has been an issue, and there have been various strategies to pay developers to bring their apps, and if that doesn't work, to pay third-party developers to make apps that work with those services. It just has never coalesced into anything. And I think we all have our own theories. I think I've talked about the notion of engagement on PCs, how it just doesn't work the same way as it does on mobile devices, which are very personal. And I think it just speaks to the fact that we're never going to have a store like that on Windows. It just doesn't work that way. You know, the Mac App Store hasn't taken off in any meaningful way either, by the way. And I think those things are related. It's just the way that people use those devices. They're just not super interested in browsing around for apps.
Broken Windows policing was actually, I didn't realize this, came from a 1982 article by Wilson Kelling, and is widely believed to be BS. The evidence is weak that it actually made a difference in New York. Anyway, so don't do that, Microsoft. Leave the fart apps. It's okay.
Well, by the way, there is a parallel to law enforcement that I think is a fact, which is that in places that have lots of crime, just the putting police officers on the street and having them interact with people and just kind of be visible and be there helps. And in Microsoft's case, policing that store would help to some degree, right? I'm not saying it's going to solve the problem, but getting rid of all those crappy apps, of which there probably are most of them.
It would help.
Help.
And a presence, you know, that's what I notice in online communities, that the best, and the same thing happens in online communities. You know, you don't pull the weeds, pretty soon the place is overgrown by weeds, and all the flowers say, screw that, I'm not going there anymore, and then it's just completely a mess.
Yep.
But one way to fix that is the equivalent of community policing, is a presence being there. I notice when I spend more time in the comments sections of our sites or the chat room, it improves the overall quality. So a presence. Right. So Microsoft, I don't know how Microsoft puts that in action, but a little loving attention, I guess. Do you feel like they pay loving attention to the App Store?
No.
There you go.
I feel like they've done a couple blog posts recently saying we're cleaning up the store, we're going to do this. They promised it a few times, but I think the fact that they don't evangelize UWP anymore makes people kind of say, so what's going on with that? Like, are developers building, or why aren't you going out and recruiting them? Like, we don't feel as much momentum as even a year ago. Like a year ago, they, right around the holiday, they were putting blog post out after blog post, like, so-and-so's building for UWP. They're doing an app for the store. Here's a video of us talking to them about how they did it. And now, nothing.
That itself may be a chicken egg thing, right? You know,
it might be.
Yeah, Microsoft wants to talk about momentum. They want to be able to say, hey, look, this happened. You know, when there are the handful of high profile wins that they've had, and they're sort of like wins asked, you know, with an asterisk, but you know, Evernote doing a centennial app, Adobe Photoshop doing a centennial app. You know, they talk about that, right? I mean, you can tell they want to talk about success stories, and God knows Microsoft loves momentum stories, but I don't think there's momentum. You know, I think that's the problem.
Right.
They got
so they're
momentum.
In a tough spot. I mean, every build they'll talk it up. What's the developer story here? You know, what's our latest thing to get drive usage? I mean, they've made Windows 10 so annoying with ads, trying to drive people to the store. Much like their aggressive tactics with the Windows 10 upgrade, I think that is in fact turning people off to the store. You know,
that's too bad.
They're trying,
I shut that off. I shut that title off immediately.
Oh,
that,
interesting. Yeah.
Because let me tell you something, Mary Jo. You could use Drawboard PDF to mark up your PDFs. Just let me know if you need a link.
Right.
Yeah, I shut that off too right away. Yeah.
Yep.
Last thing you want really in your start menu.
I know.
Yeah.
Yep. No.
I understand their motivation for doing it. That's the hard thing. How do you get discovery?
Yep. That's what I mean. It's just there's no easy solution. They would have done it. You know, they're trying, but it's like it's not working.
Yeah. I feel your pain, Microsoft.
It's tough.
Yeah.
No momentum.
The store has no momentum.
I think
that's good.
I think that's a good new word I just coined.
Yep.
You got no momentum. let's take a quick break. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking about Microsoft. Happier news certainly coming from Microsoft. We will in a moment talk about books. We'll talk about Windows 10, the Surface, artificial intelligence, Xbox, and beer. All coming up. But first, a word from a brand new sponsor that's a good old friend. I'm so glad to welcome WordPress.com. I so many years used WordPress and really love WordPress. Now, I was doing it self-hosted. They do the hosting. And so many, I think, what did I just read the other day? Some huge number. 27% of the web is run by WordPress.com. I think that number matches the discount we're going to give you, 27% off a premium business plan. Go to WordPress.com/windows, customize your domain name or bring your own. Pick from hundreds of themes for any kind of project and every feature you want. Easy to use. It's mobile ready, of course, and you get great stats on the back end. So you know exactly how your site's doing and where people are spending time so you can theme it up and make it better. WordPress.com/windows. Of course, 24/7 support. Find answers to your questions. Go back to getting stuff done. More websites run on WordPress than any other platform. Join the thousands of small businesses who use WordPress for theirs. Create your small business website on WordPress.com today with built-in search engine optimization, mobile-friendly design, all the stuff you're looking for. It's waiting for you. WordPress.com/windows for 27% off a premium or business plan. I'm thrilled. I am thrilled to get them on the show. I've been a fan, a friend of Matt Mullenweg's, a creator of WordPress, and a fan of the product for forever and ever and ever.
We use it.
Who doesn't, right? I mean, is that your CMS at Thurrott.com?
Yeah.
It's WordPress, really. I didn't know that. That looks good. All right.
Yeah.
Back to the salt mines, Mary Jo and Paul, a.k.a. Windows Weekly. Microsoft is adding ebooks to the Windows Store?
Maybe. Seems to be.
Possibly.
Could be.
Right. Another MS Power user story. By the way, those guys are really killing it lately on Scoops. They found some screenshots of a yet-to-be-released build of Windows 10 Creators Update, they say, for mobile that makes it look as if there will be a bookstore, an e-bookstore, in the Creators Update,
right,
which is kind of odd. And, you know, in a build of the Creators Update that came out last fall, Microsoft had EPUB support added to Edge, and it looks like they're trying to make it so Edge would be the reader. And I don't know if there'll be dedicated reading apps or any connections to other platforms, but we'll see, I guess. kind of odd.
Mixed on this one.
I am too.
For a variety of reasons. I don't know that Microsoft has ever been a good content provider. They seem to give up on platforms pretty frequently.
Yeah.
I know a lot of Microsoft guys are kind of riding on this one. Mm-hmm. The big problem with the Windows Store stuff is that it's so locked to Windows. And when you think about things like movies and TV shows, especially, or music, ebooks, people do not enjoy that content on their Windows PCs. Typically, they enjoy that content on their HD TVs using a set-top box, or they use a tablet or a smartphone, which is not Windows-based. And Microsoft doesn't have stuff on those other systems, with the exception of Groove, which is available on Android and iOS. But they don't have anything for set-top boxes of any kind. They're not on Apple TV. They're not on Android TV. They're not on Amazon Fire TV. They're not on Roku. The movie and TV service is not on Android or iOS. And it's kind of a weird deal. My big fear with this one, because I mean, I trust Microsoft generally speaking, right? Obviously. Mm-hmm. But my big worry with this thing is that this is Nokia all over again, that they're doing this because they have to. Because Amazon has basically abandoned Windows, right? Those apps are still there, but they're terrible, and they haven't been updated forever. iBooks is never coming to Windows, obviously. Google has an ebook service. It's never coming to Windows except on the web, I guess. Barnes & Noble is circling the drain. So it's almost like they're forced to do this, because otherwise Windows won't have a high-quality reading experience, and that stinks. Because when you're forced to do something like this, it's not the same as we see a great market for this, right? Like, this is such a great idea. And I'm really worried that that's what this is.
Mm. You know, when I read this story, my first thought was, oh, this makes a natural complement to that device we were just talking about, the future Microsoft device that may be a foldable phone, right? Like, how cool would that be if you could read on that, because it looks like a book. If in a certain configuration, right?
Yep.
But I agree with you on all your points. I forget who said this on my Twitter feed, but somebody said, I feel like Microsoft's just adding ebooks because maybe sometime they'll try to launch something like Amazon Prime, and they'll need to have books. They'll have, photos, music, TV, and maybe they're going to try to add books as part of a, subscription package that they might offer to people for Windows devices. Yeah. I don't know. But what? If your whole library is in Kindle, like yours is probably and mine is, why then do you start using another e-reader platform?
Yep. I mean, my whole library is in Kindle. Although, for whatever it's worth, I mean, I have a couple of things at iBooks for some reason, some Apple documentation in there, some developer stuff. I have some stuff even in the Google stuff. And it's a mess. It's already a mess. Just, having three different places for that stuff. It's worse with movies and TV shows, frankly. The PC is what the PC is, and that's where Microsoft is successful. And I just don't think the PC is a great delivery mechanism for any of this content. It just isn't. And I know there are exceptions to this where people love their mini tablet, or that maybe even their Windows Phone phablet or whatever, or they have an Xbox in the living room. And that's how they watch TV shows and stuff. And okay. I know those things exist. I mean, don't get me wrong, but those are not really mainstream solutions, frankly.
Right.
These other things are. And I think for this to make any sense at all, this stuff has to be available everywhere. And they haven't done it with movies and TV shows. Why would we trust them to do it with ebooks?
Well, to be fair, neither does Apple or Amazon.
No, but
right?
Apple.
And it may not be fully
Apple
in there.
Apple serves a. What's that?
It may not be fully in their control. I mean, you have to make deals with publishers for this stuff.
You do.
I bet you the deal says.
But the difference between, for example, like Apple, the majority of their market is on mobile devices that are very popular, right? And those mobile devices happen to be good vehicles for delivering, like, say, ebooks. Those make sense. You can at least make that argument. I mean, even Google has an ebook store. They have the most popular mobile platform. I bet they don't have, relatively speaking, that many users of their ebook store, but it makes sense for them to have it because that market is so big. The Windows market, the Windows 10 market, is much smaller than either of those markets, but that's not what you have to look at. The market of people who will use those devices to read is tiny. It's really small. Because we don't treat Windows devices like consumption devices for the most part. I know there are always exceptions. I mean, some people will get on a plane and use their Surface to watch a movie. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's just, we just don't have great software or solutions or market penetration in those areas. It's just the way it is.
Well, and readers, dedicated readers, are plummet. Sales are plummeting, right? People aren't buying Kindles anymore. So, so they're doing it, but they're doing it on, I would say, well, phones are big enough now where you almost could. What do you think? Is it phones?
Nobody uses
tablets?
Windows phones. Yeah.
I know.
Well, it could be both.
Tablets, right? And maybe their OEMs are asking them to do this, you know, saying we want there to be a market for this too on our tablets as we build them for Windows.
I think there's an opportunity. I mean, if I bought a Yoga, I might well put content on there because then I'll fold it over.
But when you fold it over, the thing is, it looks like it's this
facing
tall.
The other way.
It's a terrible device for reading. It's just terrible. The Surface device
you don't
is
hold
whatever. That's
in
where
you don't want to hold it in portrait mode, is what you're saying.
No. It's awful. There's something terrible about a widescreen 13-inch display held in portrait mode.
On the other hand, watching TV or a movie, that's exactly what you want. Landscape.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. But books, maybe you're right. I don't. Yeah. What is the market for e-books? I mean,
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Well, if you're not Amazon, right?
That's actually the better question. If you're not Amazon. I buy programming books, computer books, and e-books because it's searchable. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I often use it on a second screen next to my computer.
Yeah.
So
I think that market, I threw a little bit into my post on this saying, what if they did it for textbooks? Because remember when they did that deal with Barnes & Noble?
Yes.
They were talking about doing a college textbook store for Windows, right? And now that they are really making a much bigger education push at Microsoft to try to compete with Chromebooks, that would be a very interesting selling point if you could get textbooks through a textbook store on a Windows device.
It's a futures. They're buying futures. They're buying into the potential.
But the issue is, can we trust them? In other words, 2 years from now,
they may get
are they
going
to look back at this and say, you know what, this didn't amount to anything. We're going to stop doing this. And then there are going to be people who fall for everything they do and they bought stuff.
Yeah.
And now they're kind of stranded, you know.
But this is a problem you have with every company. I mean, you have the same problem with Google. Adoption of any Google technology involves, are they? How long is this going to be around?
Microsoft gives away a lot of Microsoft Pressbooks in a variety of formats, right? And so they'll always do, you know, PDF, EPUB, and Mobi. And EPUB has a big advantage over a PDF in that it can format like a web page can, and so it can adapt to the screen and so forth.
It's also the open standard, so you can run that on anything, including a Kindle.
So, I mean, adding that capability to Edge is okay. I mean, you were talking about using a second screen, but you could imagine on a widescreen PC display.
I do that too.
You have side by side, and you could make the argument for that. But that's not a big, you know, we're not talking about a market there. That's just it's like a nice feature. It's nice to have, but it's not. That doesn't turn into like Microsoft's next $1 billion business.
What about magazines? At least you don't worry about DRM making those unreadable in 2 years, because who cares? Would you mind, by the way, Paul, just rearranging those album arts to you over your right shoulder so that Windows Weekly is on the other side, so that when I do the two shot, we don't just see the what? No, I'm kidding you.
Oh. You're actually.
It's a big ad for What the Tech over your shoulder.
Right. They're not even supposed to be there.
And you've cut off Mary Jo's head.
Yep.
Not intentionally, what? I know. That's okay. We'll blur it in post. It's fine. And we're going to change your voice to a little girly voice, but you don't mind that. No, just teasing.
Sorry, I didn't.
No, I'm teasing. I don't care.
I'm moving stuff around and cleaning up.
You know, I finally saw a picture of your office on your Instagram, I think, or Facebook from the other angle. It's so strange because all we do with Mary Jo and Paul is we see them from the other side of their computer screen. And
what's weird is I have these pictures, you know, here and there of my office. Or sometimes it'll just be like pictures of my kids and my office. You know, my office happens to be there. And you can go back like 10 years or more, and it's basically the same exact thing. The computer screen and the computer change, right?
Yeah, they're getting bigger.
You can see like Windows Vista or, you know, today, you know, Windows 10 or whatever. But it's really weird like how many things in this office are exactly the same you know, as they were like a really long time ago.
You know, Einstein's office is exactly the same. It hasn't changed. Yeah. Of course, he hasn't used it in a while.
No.
We'll have the Smithsonian be right over to shrink.
They'll put it next to Julia Child's kitchen.
Right.
Is that the Smithsonian? Sure.
Yeah.
American, the National Museum of American History.
Oh, that's so cool.
Oh, sorry. You're
right. Gotta see that.
Yep.
That would be fun to see.
I've never seen it, but I've
seen pictures. It looks cool.
Yeah, the ruby slippers are there from The Wizard of Oz, you know, C-3PO, the first Macintosh mouse.
That's neat. Is that New York?
D.C.
D.C. Okay.
Yep. We can go when we go to the partner show.
Yes, I love that place.
When is the partner show?
In July?
July.
Okay.
July in Washington, D.C. Woo, hot.
Hot. It's a swamp. Yep. It's a swamp.
It is.
We're going to drain literally. The swamp, but it's literally
okay.
A swamp.
I'll take it.
Windows 10. Big update. When did that creator's update go to the Insider's Ring? So, this week? Last week?
Friday, right? Wasn't it?
I know. It's all a blur.
Seem like a long time ago.
Yeah. We talked about 15.002 on last week's show, which was January 9th. But then just a few days later, they rolled out 15.007 to PC and mobile Fast Ring Insiders. So just a few days later. Could you update it, Paul? Could you actually get 15.007?
Right.
Why wouldn't you be able to?
Because
yeah,
many
I did eventually.
People
yes,
could
I
not.
Did. Right. That's right. Because it took a long time. Yeah. When it first came out, nobody could get it. I couldn't get it. Yeah. Right. I did eventually get it. That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. I know. It feels like a long time ago. I think it was Friday. But this one also had quite a few new features compared to some of the previous updates we've been getting, right?
Yeah. Second one in a row. Bunch of Edge stuff. There was like importing of not just favorites from other browsers, but also browsing history and save passwords, which is kind of cool. And then also the ability to export favorites or import favorites from XML, I believe, or HTML, I guess.
Quick links in the Action Center through Cortana. So you can pick up where you left off using Cortana, using cues from the Action Center. That's actually a pretty cool feature. I like that one.
Yeah. Yep.
What else?
The themes are coming and they'll be in the store.
Right.
So it's 1998 all over again or whatever.
But people like love that themes, so.
Yeah.
Yep. And quite a few tweaks on mobile around Azure Active Directory, enterprise state roaming, syncing passwords, using that new payment request API for web payments. All those things got added to the mobile version with this release. So, yeah, it was a lot, actually, for two back-to-back Insider releases for Windows 10. I saw a lot of people saying they were having problems with Edge and problems with Facebook after this. I mean, it is a Fast Ring Insider build, so it's not meant to be stable, but people are, of course, asking for the next build because they've said, oh, I can't use my mobile device or whatever. So we're still not ready to declare RTM on this one for sure. There's a long way to go. Yeah.
Yeah, we should have at least one build this week. They've been talking about it. So we know they're trying to get one out.
I can't believe in January we're already talking about RTM. I mean,
yeah.
So it's going to come out late July, early August, like the anniversary update?
April.
Oh, okay.
April-ish.
Three months from now. So this is about when you would start to expect
Well, they got to do like bug bash, get out the last bugs.
Right.
Have a few extra builds, and then usually they pick a candidate and they declare it. They don't call it RTM anymore. I still do. No one else does. I call
it
release to mainstream.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Here, Joe, we don't really release it to manufacturing. I don't know why you insist.
How about RTM being release to mainstream?
I like it. Release to mainstream.
Yeah. So I bet they'll declare some build as the one around sometime in March.
Okay. So we're
not that far away.
Then they'll update that 117 times before it becomes generally available.
Yep. You know. Yep. So we're getting closer, but the builds are actually adding a lot more features. I mean, if that story about the ebook store is correct. That's going to be in one of the upcoming builds, right? That should be added.
It's not so much that they're getting to RTM is that they're getting to feature freeze, right? That they're getting to feature lock.
Right.
Yeah, don't dare add new features at this point. We're going to really try to make everything
and
reliable.
They talk about that, right? I mean, at some point they will say, from here on out, it's just going to be bug fixes. And
And I guess that's why it's remarkable that there's so many new features coming now at this late date. Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, it does seem kind of odd.
Yeah. Yep. Well, we've really killed that subject. anything else?
We should talk about game mode, Paul.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Game mode.
Yeah. This will take 60 seconds because there really isn't anything to say.
what is game mode?
This has generated 150 blog posts. Yeah. There's a feature called game mode coming to Windows 10.
Okay.
It's going to make games run faster.
Okay.
That's all we know.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's not hard to imagine what this is, right? In other words, when you run a game, it will shut down non-essential services and maybe at your discretion turn off background notifications, whatever, to provide the most possible performance to that one thing that you're paying attention to, the game. And so in doing so, you know, your Windows 10 PC will behave a bit more like a video game console,
and
right?
My Windows key will stop responding, I hope.
Yes. Yeah.
That's all I really want with a game.
It will still download updates to Windows 10, obviously, because why would you ever stop that?
Yeah. This is actually non-trivial because I tell you what, on the iPad, I still get notifications when I'm in games, and it's extremely frustrating because it often covers controls. It comes down and, you know, I mean, it's not a – I don't think this is a small thing.
Sure.
I'm glad they're
doing it. It's a little weird that this hasn't been a thing in Windows yet, but – it's coming. And so that's, like the ebook store and the software, almost definitely we'll see in a build soon.
Yeah.
I think they had to announce it and literally provide zero information about it because there was a way to see the words game mode somewhere in the current build and they knew people were going to see it and freak out. And so they basically just said, look, this is coming. Don't worry about it.
It doesn't mean as much. That word does not mean what you think it means. I do not think that word means what you think it means. What is Simply Gone? It's, by the way, a terrible name, Simply Gone.
I know.
Okay.
There were a lot of puns the day Microsoft announced they were buying Simply Gone.
Well, they're gone.
Because they're simply gone.
Oh, yeah, they're gone.
Yeah. What is it? So, what do they do?
They do 3D data optimization for games and also virtual reality. So people in the gaming space know them quite well. They're based in Sweden, and Microsoft bought them for some undisclosed amount. And they say it's going to be a natural complement to what they're doing to try to bring 3D everywhere to both Windows 10 with the Creators Update and to extended reality with HoloLens and all the VR add-on headsets. So what does that really mean? Good question. 3D data optimization. It's a little vague when you go to their site.
As vague as game mode?
Oh, not quite that game.
I can understand kind of 3D data visualization.
Right.
Yeah.
Optimization, not quite so sure what that would mean.
Yeah.
Optimization.
I wish I could help, but I cannot. Yeah, but they bought them, so there you have it.
Paul is optimizing his visualization in 3D. That's it.
Nice.
There you go.
is that
by the way,
prominent.
A fan makes those, and I wish I had his name.
Oh, yeah.
I know, I did too. So awesome.
He's made us a bunch of
them. I need a new version where my hair is the right color.
We do. We need gray.
I think he's like carving. It's a relief version of the album art. Is he carving wood and then painting it? Something really nice. I have...
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
One of them here, and I have one at home. The screensaver's at home. And he's really nice. He's done most of our album art. Oh, no, there's a screensaver's right behind me. And then there's a Twit one. For those of you not watching at home, who cares? Windows Hello. Can I just say, first I thought Windows Hello was dopey. Now I would say do not buy a computer that doesn't have a Hello camera. I love Hello.
Well, I mean, the big difference between now and, say, even 3-4 months ago is that now you can say that because those Windows Hello cameras are finally everywhere.
Well, I've always had Microsoft gear, which had it, right?
Yeah, Microsoft has done it. But, yeah. You know, it's interesting. I wrote about this sometime last year. I said, you know, where is all this stuff? I mean, Windows 10 has now been out for over a year and a half. You know, Microsoft has yet to release a single peripheral that supports Windows Hello except for one type cover for Surface Pro.
Tell people who don't know what we're talking about what Windows Hello is.
Sorry. So Windows Hello is a set of ways to sign into Windows using biometric means. It could be a fingerprint reader or swipe. It could be different kinds of cameras. They have IR cameras, and there's also an iris scan type of camera. It requires special hardware, obviously. It works with local accounts and with Microsoft accounts, and I'm sure with work accounts as well. But you have to have a password and a PIN configured first. And so if you have a Windows Hello compatible camera, which I do not, if you walk up and sit in front of it, it will see that you're there, see that it's you, and log you in.
I'm hoping that it's really secure. That's the only thing that worries me a little bit. But well, we've tried to hold up pictures and stuff.
It's not, you're right. You can't hold up a picture of, you know, a person or whatever.
And that somebody who looks like me. I mean, like, what I got to do is get some identical twins in here. Megan has identical twins.
They've tried that.
Does it work?
Yeah.
It can distinguish
them.
See, it's so much easier than any other way of doing it. Once it's working well, and it does on the Surface Book and on the Surface Studio, it's instant. Yeah. And so that means you sit down at your computer and it goes, oh, hi, Leo.
There's a lot to it, though. Like, I wear glasses, and so if I don't train it with glasses and without glasses, it won't recognize me, right, if I'm wearing the glasses. Also, if it's like this type of situation where the camera happens to be looking at me from this direction, if I go take the thing and lay down on a couch or whatever, if the angle's off, it won't even recognize you. Unless, again, you can train it to do all the different scenarios, but it's accurate, and I haven't used it on phone in a long, long time, but and that was always pretty terrible. But I agree that the PC-based stuff is better. And I guess the big thing that's changed, there's two big things that have changed. One is Windows Hello capabilities are finally built into lots and lots of new computers. It took PC makers many months to kind of get on board with that. In part, by the way, because Microsoft didn't tell them about it until right before Windows 10 shipped. And the other thing is that we're starting to see a lot of new Windows Hello compatible hardware, which are new types of biometric security devices. Like, there's a YubiKey available now that's Windows Hello compatible. There are smart cards. There are companies that make what I think they're just called smart employee identification cards. So it's not like those super thin sub credit card thin cards, but they're like the big cards, you know, that you kind of wear them on a clip or whatever, and it has your photo on it and whatever. And you can use those to sign in to computers now as well, assuming you have the correct hardware for that. So it's finally happening. And so we're closing in on the 2-year mark for when they announced it. Or did they announce this in January that year? Do you remember, Mary Jo?
Good question.
I don't remember, but it was in the 6 months before Windows 10 came out, they announced it, the feature.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't remember, but... we're finally seeing it.
You know, I was looking at some of those presentations from WinHEC at the end of last year, and one of them was, what are the hero features that Microsoft is going to be touting with Windows 10 in the coming year? And Hello, of course, is one of the big ones, right?
Yeah.
And they talked a lot about all kinds of devices, like you're saying, but also fingerprint readers, Bluetooth keychains, keyboards, mice, like all these other things, not just the computers themselves.
So yeah, exactly.
It's a brilliant
companion
concept.
Devices. And
one of the fundamental issues of computing is authentication. And you know, Apple owns fingerprint. They put that everywhere, even their laptops. But fingerprint is, you know, it's nice to have multiple forms of authentication, and I think Hello is basically a framework for all different kinds of authentication, including facial recognition.
Yeah,
and I think it's great. I just really think it was a sensible thing to focus on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my computer's gone to sleep, but all I have to do is press a button and say, "No, seriously, it just did that. Did you see? It says hello, Leo." Yep.
Hello, Leo. Hello. That's what it should do. Hello, Leo.
You should have Paul's voice.
Is it the same? Because the Kinect did that on does that on the Xbox, and it's really kind of. Yeah. But it, I don't think it's as good because when I sit down, it says "Hello, Leo," and when Michael, our 14-year-old, sits down, it says "Hello, Michael." But Lisa looks so much like her son that when she sits down, it says "Hello, Michael."
I had to turn that off on mine. I set my Xbox up just to auto log in now. I don't even have it look at me.
Yeah, come on,
who's all this goofy stuff? My son would walk in, he'd be like, "Hey, how are you doing?" And then the Xbox would say, "Hi, Mark."
You know, in the middle of a game. In the middle of a game. Hey, Mark's here. Hey, come on, Mark, join in. We're having fun.
And then he's like, great, it just signed me out from down in the cellar.
Yeah, so you're right. I should turn that off because there's no reason. It's not like you're bringing, like your Xbox is in a public library.
Yeah, there's not less security stuff going on the Xbox, you know, with that. Yeah. With regards to, I don't know, whatever personal information.
Yeah. Okay, hello, hi. let's see, Windows hello. Microsoft details tweaks to Windows 7 and 8.1 patch roll-ups. How are they tweaking those?
Yeah, let's talk about Windows 7, because a lot of people, including me, still are running Windows 7 in some places. And if you remember late last year, Microsoft said, hey, we're going to try to make it a little easier on people. We're going to do patch roll-ups now for Windows 7, 8.1, and a couple of the server versions. So they did that for a couple months, got some user feedback / complaints about how things were working and not working. And so they're making a few tweaks to how they're doing this. So one of the tweaks is a little complicated to explain, but it involves whether you're applying a monthly patch, security only, or security plus quality patch. And I've got a whole post with a handy dandy chart in it that will make this way easier if you go and look for this post on my site. But the other thing to know is for a while, Microsoft was rolling IE patches in with the 7 and 8.1 monthly roll-ups, and now they're going to be taking them out as of February because they said it was making the roll-ups really, really huge, and people were complaining about how big they were.
That's good.
So, yeah.
Internet
so
now Explorer, the gift that keeps on giving.
I know. Those, if you're still using IE and if you have IE on your systems and need to keep patching it, you're going to have to go get the separate IE patch plus these monthly roll-ups. But I think that will be probably fairly welcomed by most IT pros and admins because the patches were getting pretty huge, people were saying. The other thing I want to talk about with Windows 7. Sorry, did you want to
say something? I was just looking at your chart. And
the handy-dandy chart?
This is exactly what's wrong with updating in a nutshell. Right? That this is required.
It's complicated, right? I know.
It's like a flow chart of things that could go wrong. You know?
If you're doing this, you should do this. If you're doing this, you should take this path. I know. That's how it goes. Yeah. But I wanted to also mention on Windows 7 something because Microsoft is starting to turn up the volume on trying to convince people who are still on 7 that they should go to 10. And part of its latest campaign, which it's kicking off this month, is Windows 7 is so outdated that even your patches cannot keep you secure. So I'll say a couple things about that. You are supported on Windows 7 by Microsoft for free through January 2020. There's still 3 years that you legitimately can run Windows 7. And I'm sure there is I will say there is definitely some truth to the fact that Windows 10 is more secure now than Windows 7. But Microsoft's job is to keep patching Windows 7 until 2020, especially with security updates. And I don't think this is a really fair pitch of them to be giving because it's their job to keep you safe if you're running Windows 7. That was part of their contract with you.
Mary Jo Foley Firebrand, I love it.
Don't promise 10 years of support
if you're not going to
do it. And badger people for the last 3 years of that 10 years. Exactly.
Yeah.
So one reason they should start talking about this is enterprises, it can take them 3 years to upgrade hundreds of thousands of users to a new version of an operating system. There's a lot of testing they have to do, and there's a lot of procedures and red tape and all kinds of things. But people who are reading this who are not in companies with hundreds of thousands of PCs feel like Microsoft is trying to get out of supporting them. They will not stop supporting you till 2020, just so you know. They will not pull the rug out from under you. Stop patching. It's their job to do it. So you can kind of, if you're not in a big organization where you're probably already planning to go Windows 10, you probably can just kind of turn a deaf ear to some of this. That's my advice. Rant over.
Nice. We got to get Mary Jo fired up more
Mary Jo,
often.
You know, if I could just say something on behalf of all of the people who watch and listen to the show, why are you always so negative?
I am. You could just call me Eeyore. Oh, wait, that's right.
Yeah. Paul, you missed your opportunity to say, hold on, Eeyore.
Yeah. Settle down, Eeyore.
Settle down. No, that's awesome. No, I agree with you, Mary Jo. I agree with you.
She's right.
She's absolutely right.
I think other people would agree as well. I get what they're trying to do. They're getting people to think about this now, but it comes off instead like, hey, you know, we said we'd support you for 10 years, but we're not really going to. That's what it kind of sounds like.
It did. No, that's right. That's exactly how it sounded. Yeah. Okay. So they are.
Got it.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I don't know. I didn't see this firmware update, but you know, I haven't. I'm going to use my Surface Studio this afternoon after the show for This Week in Google. There's a firmware update here.
Yeah, I don't have one to verify this, but I've heard it from many people via email and Twitter, so it's real. But you know, Microsoft does this goofy thing where they ship firmware updates and then they document it a couple of days later. So,
we don't know what it's doing.
Yeah, we don't know what it is.
I guess you just wait for a little while, make sure it doesn't brick anything, right?
Yeah, what could go wrong? It's Microsoft.
I'm just glad they're still supporting it after all this time.
Yeah, after 2 months. Yeah, me too.
Thank goodness. I still love it. And I was glad we put the SSD in. We replaced the slow drive with a solid state drive. That was a big improvement. And at this point, it feels nice. It's just a nice, usable for certain situations. It's not for everybody, but for certain situations. What's that? Oh, that's my
son. Sounds like someone was getting an iPhone call.
Yeah. It was me. No.
It's so funny because I don't actually have an iPhone in here. So, oh, look at that. Listen to that sound.
Yeah. The funny, I do have an iPhone, but my iPhone is not ringing.
Must be me. I like the retro iPhone. Marimba sounds.
Sure.
Love those. Where was we before the phone rang? Why are you reviewing the Surface Dial if you don't have a Surface Studio?
Because I have a Surface Dial.
No, can you use it actually, with a Surface? I guess you can.
Yeah, so you could. Well, by the way, you can use it with any PC, for one thing. You don't have to put it on the screen. In fact, I never found a use for putting it on the screen.
And it's
kind of interesting because it will control volume from anywhere, right? But if you put it on an application, you'll get different options. And I'm sorry, you don't put it on anything. But if you select an application with the mouse, the keyboard, and then you press down that button,
it gets different.
You
stuff.
Will see, different options based on the application. Some of them are common to applications in Windows. Some of them are application specific, like Windows Maps, for example, has tilting and viewing options that are available from the dial, which are pretty cool. You can scroll through documents and web pages and things like that. Even on a Surface Pro or a Surface Book, you should be able to use, this may not be the right word, but like proximity sensing apps where the screen can actually detect that it's on the screen and where it is on the screen, and then compatible apps.
Oh, that's interesting. So it doesn't need special hardware like
well,
as
it does.
In the studio.
It needs Surface hardware.
All surfaces can do it.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously,
it doesn't make sense on a tiny screen because it takes up so much
room. It makes
room.
Way more sense on a big screen. So I wasn't able to test the proximity thing. I might have the wrong name on that. But I'm not aware of any software that supports that today, or I certainly don't have any myself. But you can do the two-handed thing.
It's paired by Bluetooth.
Yep, but it also has a sensor that works with the screen.
Okay. Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
That was very forward-thinking of Microsoft.
Yeah.
To build that in. Yeah, I feel bad because I've had this thing for a while and I haven't really talked about all the cool things it can do. So by default, and as you said, you can use it on a desk and tap it on the desk and you get a circle on the screen that shows you the choices. By default, it's got what? Undo, scroll.
Volume. Yeah, and
there's four things.
Yeah, it depends.
I leave it in scroll usually because it's a really nice way to scroll web pages.
Yeah, like so here. I actually have it connected to this computer. Let's see. I paired it with the book. Never mind.
And then and then as you say, if you have specific stuff like, and there aren't very many yet. I hope there'll be more.
No.
Yeah.
No, but you can use so like the Sketchpad app in Windows 10 is compatible, and you can use a pen in one hand and the dial in the other, and it will, you know, it gives you pen options. I can't remember the exact set of options, but it allows you to do that thing we've always kind of talked about with Surface Studio, which is you're in a kind of a drawing program and you're using this to make selections of, you know, pen widths and colors and styles and so forth. Well, you're not, you don't have to drop the pen or you don't have to use the pen as a pointer.
You're a graphic artist, so I'm really, we had Patrick Delahanty's wife, Svetlana, who is a she does graphic novels, very best-selling graphic novels for children, use it. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, to have the pen in one hand, I'm a lefty, so don't be confused
by
it. But I have a pen in one hand, and you can switch that, of course.
Actually, it looks good when you're left-handed because for us, that's the way we would do it.
Yeah, right. it's sensible. It's not something I can do because I don't do that kind of illustration.
Yeah. Well,
so,
by the way,
it works for you,
clear,
though, right?
I don't either, right? Oh, the truth is, even though I do use Photoshop every day and I use paint or whatever.
You wouldn't do it the way you do.
I don't do it with a pen, so... Yeah. This is, to me, as maybe foreign as it would be to anybody. Okay. I'm not going to claim any kind of expertise along those lines. But I just thinking about computer user interfaces and how things work and so forth, I do think this two-handed use is really useful, and not just for artists, but for, you know, architects and people doing CAD/CAM. I think there are a lot of examples where we can... You know, it's not a left brain, left brain, right brain thing, but it is a left hand, right hand thing. And I think, you know, people, especially artists, you know, probably do have that kind of dexterity. And I think it will become very natural. Like, I think it's a neat idea. I'm not going to use it as a writer, you know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Well, you know, if you're a really bad writer, you might use the undo. You like write something.
Well, writing with a pen, maybe.
Oh, it would make,
right?
Yeah, right. Could, yeah.
But
I wonder if anybody writes with a pen.
No, but you, maybe if you're editing a like, in other words, you get a document.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you
definitely blue penciling
edit.
For sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you're using your one hand for that, and then you're scrolling the document with your other hand.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe. I just think
I'm
it's really.
I'm not sure that's more efficient.
It's kind of cool to see a new user input device after all these years, and one that actually makes sense instead of, like, you know.
Yeah, and one that's a general purpose thing. It's not designed for one thing. It can literally be programmed to work with any application. And there are some goofy examples, in, like, you know, Windows Map. You can, you know, tilt the view of the map, for example. And it's sort of an atypical usage. You can scrub songs in Groove. You can select pens in Sketchpad, et cetera. Like, it's, you know, you can see how it could work across a variety of things.
Well, there you have it. The entire world of the Surface Dial. Everything you ever wanted.
As it stands today, yeah, pretty much.
Do you think you could use it for gaming, maybe?
Right. There's no reason.
Boy, that was an endorsement. Holy cow.
Well, I guess there's no reason you couldn't, right? It's just that there isn't a game like that. But if you think about like a... I have to make something up, like a constant runner game, like that Super Mario game. You know, you could imagine, yes, being able to use that as an input, I guess. But it's, I don't know, like you get two of them and make an Etch-a-Sketch. I'm not really sure, you know, where you would go with that.
Ooh, I like that. Load Runner would be great for that.
An AM/FM radio application. I don't know.
All right. One more before we take a break. We saw the Intel Compute Card. It's so funny. They did last CES, they did the Compute Stick.
Yep.
And I bought one. I think it's in my drawer right here.
Yeah, actually, that's funny you say that. Mine is right here.
Yeah. I mean, I found no good use for it.
Where's mine?
I got the one with Linux on it, so I could just turn any TV into a Linux box. A lot of use that is. This time they showed the Compute Card, which actually makes a little more sense. Is it PC card sized? Seems like it's kind of like that form factor.
Probably, yeah, actually, that's funny you say that. It probably is. Intel just reinvented the PC MCIA card. It is sort of like that, except, of course, it's an entire SoC on there, right? There's an adapter on there to go out to USB-C Thunderbolt, which is kind of cool.
Is it? So it's not. It's, instead of being an HDMI device,
it has to have a purpose-built slot
for it.
But there are two uses for it. So the card thing that we're thinking of, where it looks like a PC card, is the way you would buy it as a consumer, because then you could plug stuff onto it and make it into a computer. But it will also come on like a computer card, and companies can embed that inside their devices. And that thing is probably closer to a credit card. Like the thing you see in the photo you're showing now is the shell that Intel will presumably provide in the retail box. But I think you can also get it just as a raw card, like the mini motherboard or whatever, SoC.
So the picture on your page is going into a kind of a thin client, but looks like a laptop.
So this company, remember last year, they made the company's called NextDock, the product's called NextDock, but they made a NextDock device, which is like a laptop that has a battery but no internal electronics beyond the stuff needed for the ports. And what you can do is connect a phone to it, a Raspberry Pi. If it's a Windows phone, it can work like a Continuum device So now they're doing a second-gen version this summer that's going to be based around – well, actually, we'll still do that other stuff too, but there's going to be a slot in it for an Intel compute card. And so you can use that as the basis for a laptop.
But this is a little like that HP Elite, but instead of a phone and Continuum, but you could carry your card with you and get to the satellite office and plug your card in, and you'd be up and ready to go. I guess that's one use case anyway. They also talked a lot about, though, things like a set-top box. There'd be a lot of other, embedded applications for that as well, I think.
Right.
Yeah. All right, let's take a teeny-weeny, little teensy-weensy break and come back with more Mary Jo Foley, Firebrand Foley, we call her. And Paul Thurrott. And we are talking Microsoft and Windows. And right now, let's talk about Rocket Mortgage, a solution for the geeks in us all. If you've ever applied for a home loan or a refi, which is really the same thing, you're probably aware of the old-fashioned way, the predominant way of doing it. We bought our house a little more than 3 years ago, October 2013. And we applied for we were going on vacation in July. No, September. We applied for the loan in early September thinking, we got 2 weeks. It'd be plenty of time. You go into the loan office. The loan officer might as well have a green eye shade and sleeve garters. And he has this sheaf, 2 or 3 inch. It's like a phone book, but they're printed every day. With the loan numbers, like the LIBOR and all the different rates and it's printed on little thin like paper, and he literally licked his finger and went flips through it to find the rate. It's crazy. It was crazy, and we brought in papers at books and like boxes of papers, and then we thought, it'll all be done. 9 days later, we're getting on a boat. We got on the boat, and we start getting these calls. Oh, can you send us? We need they want paper. We had to get Lisa's sister, Debbie, who was still here, to go get the – it was crazy. It took, I think, a month to get the loan. Nowadays, we got computers, kids, and we got a better way to do it. Quicken Loans, which is one of the premier lenders in the U.S., has created Rocket Mortgage, a completely transparent online solution. Online means a few things, of course. One is you don't have to get up off the couch. You can do the whole loan approval process is in your home, on your phone, on your tablet, on your computer. You can all the documents they need are electronically available from your bank, the bank statements, from your employer, the pay stub. So you just boop, boop, boop. I mean, this is finally the world catching up with the 21st century here, the mortgage world. And then the other thing a computer means, of course, is it's fast, so they can turn around right away. But it also means you get a screen where you have sliders that you can adjust the rate, the length of the loan. You completely have control. It's completely transparent. Of course, Quicken Loans, absolutely trustworthy, the best mortgage lender in the country. So this is really a win. And then you'll get approved in minutes for a loan that is exactly right for your needs, your financial situation. Whether you're looking to buy a new house, maybe it's time. Just even if you're not, you say, oh, I'm not in the market right now. But, you know, if you're one of those people, and we do this, where you go to open houses just for fun. And you get to one and you go, we ought to buy this. This has happened to me several times now. This is better than our, let's move here. You can do it at the open house. You can fill out the thing on your phone and say, look, I'm approved. Hold it up. I'm approved. Or if you're looking to refi. And as interest rates seem to, you know, the Fed has indicated they're going to start raising interest rates. So now would be a good time to get some cash out of your house at the lowest possible rate. Skip the bank. Skip the waiting. Go completely online. QuickenLoans.com/windows for Rocket Mortgage. QuickenLoans.com/windows. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. We thank Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage for their support of Windows Weekly. Remember, you may not need it today, but when you do, QuickenLoans.com/windows. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. I feel like actually now that I say windows, you're kind of looking at us through two little windows in Skype, looking out at the world of windows.
You should get four, and then it could be like a Microsoft logo.
I could do that.
We could.
Yeah, put it in the big screen here. Four. We have the capability now. The goal in the studio was, they used to do this. They don't do it anymore on CNBC and other stations. They would have an octo box.
Yeah.
They would have eight people all talking at the same time, yelling, screaming. It was so much fun, and I really wanted to do that. So I told the engineers when we moved, I don't care if we ever do it, but I want you to have – I want the capability of doing an octo box.
Right.
Somebody says, Leo has more money than cents in the chat room. More dollars than cents would be the better
pun.
What
was that show where they had like – it was like the grid of people in the boxes and
– Hollywood like Squares.
Yeah. We could do it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be fun.
I would be the Paul Lind of that group.
You would.
Oh, the entire engineering staff is coming here and said, you never said that. We can't do an octobox.
Uh-oh.
Well, he said, yes, of course we can.
Dollar signs.
It all just takes money. And as Express It in the chat room says, I have more dollars than cents.
We could kludge it together.
Did they say
that's, by the way, that is the motto of the engineering staff. We could kludge it together.
Sorry, Paul. What they're going to do is stack two more monitors on top. When he said you had more money than cents, was it C-E-N-T-S or S-E-N-S-E?
S-E-N-S-E. That's the pun, see? You got more dollars than cents. That's why I rewrote his pun.
Oh, dollars than cents.
Wouldn't that be fun? Well, he didn't say that, but.
Yeah. You were fixing it.
I fixed the pun.
I got you.
So I was surprised. I was interested. Now, I love Chi Lu. I met him when he was at Yahoo, right? Or Google. Huh? He was at Yahoo, then Google, then Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And he's deemed by many to be the king of search, like the engineer for search.
Is this the guy who hurt himself on the bike?
Yes.
It is.
I assume that's part of his new contract. No bikes.
Because he's now at Baidu.
Right.
So this is if you like corporate intrigue stories, this is one that kind of left me scratching my head, I have to say. So last year, we heard that Chi Lu, who was running the Applications and Services Group at Microsoft, was leaving. And he was leaving because he had had a bike accident a few months before, and he was recovering, and it was a very long, painful process. And when he left, the word was he's not going to come back to work at Microsoft full time. But what he is going to do is become a personal advisor to Nadella and to Bill Gates. And he's going to continue to advise them in all things search AI related. Okay. Yesterday, out of the blue, Baidu announces Chi Lu is now the COO of Baidu, which seemed kind of interesting and sudden. So does he have
two jobs now?
No.
It's going to be like a Wednesday, Thursday thing with Satya Nadella. Right.
No, effective immediately, in fact. So he already is there now.
Wow.
When I contacted Microsoft yesterday for a comment, it took them all day to give me one that was just, hey, we wish him the best. Thanks for your 8 years of service here, blah, blah, blah. So this the length of time it took to get that comment makes me think they did not know that he was going to do this.
Ooh, interesting.
Although Ina Fried over at Recode had some of her sources say that that Lou told Nadella 3 weeks ago and that Nadella knew, but no one else knew.
Hmm. That, so by the way, is a sign of how much respect Chi Lu has in the industry.
He is
really considered to be a genius.
He is. And he was beloved at Microsoft. I never heard anybody have a bad word against the guy. He has like this amazing work ethic. People even thought he was kind of like the heir apparent to Satya Nadella, that he was his close confidant. So this just was like, what? You know, like out of the blue kind of. But Microsoft did say to me that they plan to continue to try to do partnering with Baidu going forward, and there's no bad feelings. It's amicable, blah, blah, blah. Of course, as soon as I posted this, people were saying, oh, here we go, just like Stephen Elop, another Trojan horse.
Oh.
No, it's not the same, you
Baidu
guys.
They're
not
going to
buy them.
No, nobody buys Baidu.
No.
They're the Google of China, right?
Right, and they are getting very serious about AI right now, and that's why they wanted Chi Lu.
Right. You know, I met him once. It was funny. I was at a Google event, and he's very unassuming. Yeah. We just started talking. Yeah. It was like a cocktail party. We just started talking. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know, I feel embarrassed at the time, how huge he was. But he was humble, obviously brilliant. It was a great conversation. And now I'm thinking, wow, I was talking to Chi Lu. QI is the Chi, and LU is the Lu. So is he going to be in, I guess he'll move back to China.
I would guess that.
And that's got to be some of the appeal for him.
Yeah, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, he's been in the States.
We don't know any more than that.
Right.
Yeah, we don't really know. It just was all very like, wow, that was quick. And I guess he never came back and advised Nadella or Gates. He just went from recovering to now COO of Baidu.
You kind of feel like Microsoft has a place in the TV show Silicon Valley at Hooli, which is the Google analog. There's on the roof, there's a place where they go and they have lunch. It's the all the executives who still work for Hooli but have nothing to do, nor portfolio, because Hooli doesn't want to get rid of them because they don't want a competitor to get them, but they've really got nothing for them to do. So they just pay them, and they come and they have lunch on the roof.
I need that job.
I know. I thought.
Me too.
Actually, I've had that job as Ziff Davis. Briefly, I was in charge of Ziff Davis television operations with Gina Smith and got paid really a crazy six-figure salary for not doing nothing. You know.
Wow.
But then, unfortunately, after a year, they called on me for a treatment, and then suddenly we had to do the site and on MSNBC. But I guess it was worth it for them to keep me around.
Mm. Nice work if you can get it.
It really is. I highly recommend it. Get that sinecure. Get it now. Speaking of deep learning, Maloob.
Yeah.
All the good Maluba. Names are taken, aren't they?
They are.
I think that's what
I know.
Yeah, that's what we're learning here.
I know.
What
right.
is Maloob?
So they are a Montreal-based AI startup, a deep learning startup. Their name is Maluba, M-A-L-U-U-B-A. That may not be how you really pronounce it. That's how I would guess you would pronounce it. Microsoft bought them as their first acquisition of 2017. Of course, you know, we know Microsoft's building up its AI stable of products and services and people. And so what Maluba does is, what do they call it? Natural language understanding and reinforcement learning. So, you know, you can train AIs to start figuring things out through reinforcement learning. It's all part of the bot strategy and the agent strategy that Microsoft has and they're building up. The Maluba co-founders are coming to work at Microsoft, and another individual whose name is Yoshua Bengio, perhaps, who's a very well-known AI expert in the Montreal Institute of Learning Algorithms, is going to be advising Microsoft, and Harry Shum, who runs the AI and research division at Microsoft. Today, Microsoft also announced they were really stepping up their AI investment in Montreal, and they were doubling the number of people they have there now. So it's really becoming kind of a hotbed of AI research up there because of the university system. And Microsoft's building up their presence there too. So very interesting what they're doing there. AI report. AI Weekly.
AI's, you know, I mean, come on. This is the
this
next.
This week in AI.
This is the next big exactly. thing. I mean, you talk about.
There's, and by there's, AI, we mean Allen Iverson, obviously.
But I really am of the opinion there are three technologies that are the next big thing. One is voice, mm-hmm. obviously. One is AR/VR, obviously. Microsoft big in both of those. And then the third is machine learning and artificial intelligence. And that may be the biggest of the three.
Put them together and you get Skynet.
Yeah. Interesting. I was just reading Chi Lu's biography. He was born in Shanghai and was sent to live in a remote province during the Cultural Revolution in China. And then he went to studying computer science at Fundan University in Shanghai. And after attending a talk by a Carnegie Mellon professor, he was invited to apply for a doctorate there, CMU. And they waived the $45 application fee. Chi Lu says, I could never have paid that. Wow. So it's a good $45 occupation fee. He went to CMU, got his PhD in 96, went to IBM and then to Yahoo. And he was actually thinking about going back to China when Steve Ballmer recruited him at Microsoft. So, and he did Bing, right?
Yeah.
And actually kind of did that partnership with Bing. One final note before we get to Xbox. Chi Lu, I was a Chinese major, so I'm going to be really didactic here, is a romanization, Q-I-L-U is a romanization of Chinese characters using a technique called pinyin. For years, we used something called Wei Giles. That's why Beijing was rendered P-E-K-I-N-G. It was the worst.
Right.
Learning how to pronounce Wei Giles was impossible. But a Chinese intellectual created the pinyin system in the 50s at the behest of the Chinese government. His name was Zhou Yuguang, and he passed away. He just passed away at the age of 111 this week.
Wow.
So if you can pronounce Chi Lu, and I know the Q is hard, but just remember it's C-H-I, Chi. Like Qi charging and so forth. But if you can pronounce it, and it's, by the way, that is considered to be one of the most important technological developments in China, because without pinyin and the ability to type Roman characters on a keyboard, computing in China would have been almost impossible. I mean, they have hundreds of thousands of characters. Right. So what they do, I didn't know this, but apparently is they have Roman keyboards. They'll type out the pinyin version of it, and the computer will translate that into a character. Or give them a choice of characters they might mean from that. Boy, that was a complete detour. I apologize. I'm going to shut up and let you talk about Xbox. Paul Theriot.
Leo, let's get to the important stuff. In a recent blog post, which had about 27 things going on in it, there was basically one little paragraph about game mode, right, in Windows 10, but also one little paragraph about a coming update to the guide, which is part of the dashboard on the Xbox One, not to be confused with the One guide, which is another guide in the Xbox One dashboard. But the guide is that thing that comes over from the side when you double click on the Xbox button on the controller. They're going to make it faster, supposedly. One of the big complaints about the Xbox One, in fact, one of the few complaints I would say these days, is the performance of the dashboard. And this is something Microsoft has promised to fix in virtually every system update, that they put out on the console. One of the ways in which this thing will be faster, and I don't mean this facetiously, but is you'll be able to press the button once to bring up the guide instead of twice. So, you know, it's faster. But I supposedly the UI is going to be faster too. So I've been burned by this kind of claim for so long. I'm just going to wait and see what happens. But supposedly it's Mike Ybarra pinged me on Twitter the other day, and he was like, seriously, it's going to be a lot faster. So
from IGN, there's and I guess Eurogamer had some of these new menus and stuff though.
Yeah, and if you look at that thing on the side, so that looks different than it does today, and it more closely resembles the start menu in some ways, right, on Windows 10. And so a lot of people are sort of speculating that maybe they're trying to bring these things a little closer together. But the start menu is a nice comparison, because if you hit the start button on your keyboard, the start menu comes up basically instantaneously. And when you do the double press today on the Xbox button, you can see it slowly animate into space. Like the screen dims first and then the thing slides over. It's slow. So hopefully this will be as fast as they promise. It's not completely clear when this is happening, but it's probably going to be part of another
update. Good UI, right? I mean, we've had that Xbox button forever.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Yeah, on the Xbox 360, remember, they used to have that little window that came up in the middle of the screen, kind of a similar UI. My biggest problem with this on the 360 was I would hit it by mistake.
Yeah, you don't want that.
And it would, you know, it kind of froze everything.
The Xbox button is positioned on the controller in a way that you're not
likely to hit it. Yeah, it's right in the middle of the top. You'd have to be doing it on purpose. So I think it'll be okay, but we'll see.
Credit to Eurogamer.net for that screenshot.
Yeah, for the shot. Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, so insiders are going to get this pretty soon, apparently, in a new build. But it's not out yet. There was news over the past week that the PlayStation 4 outsold the Xbox One over the holidays in the United States. This is based on NPD data, which I find kind of interesting, because obviously Microsoft was making a full court press with sales throughout the month to try to beat the PlayStation 4. One thing I just saw, I can't remember where, but somebody citing someone they know from NPD, or someone who has acquired the NPD data, has told them that it was actually pretty close, like 1.5 million consoles versus 1.52 million consoles. So that makes sense to me, because Microsoft actually outsold Sony for the last 6 months of 2016, which is the second half of last year. We know that, and this is the United States, we know that the Xbox One outsold the PlayStation 4 in July, August, September, and October, and that the PlayStation 4 won in November, December, which is the holiday selling season, obviously. But I guess it was pretty close. So that kind of explains why they were able to kind of win big over the second half of the year. So that's great, because if you go back in time, the Xbox One has been out for 3 years. Prior to that 6 month period, so for like about 2.5 years, the Xbox One only outsold the PlayStation twice. So they've actually done it four times in the last 6 months. That's actually pretty impressive. And then they came pretty close, I guess, at least in December. And then I don't have a story about this yet, but I don't even remember where I saw this either. I don't even have a link to it. Sorry. But Resident Evil 7 Biohazard, the new Resident Evil game, is going to be the first third-party Xbox Play Anywhere title, meaning that when you buy the game electronically on Xbox One or Windows 10, you get it for free on the other platform as well. And you can go back and forth between the two. So if you're playing the single-player experience and you get to level 3 or whatever, when you pick on the Xbox, when you pick it up on Windows 10, you'll start right from where you left off. And the achievements are shared in the save games and all that kind of stuff. So, cool.
That's good. It's almost as good as the new Nintendo Split or Switch.
So are you down on the Split?
The Switch?
The Switch. Sorry, Split.
No. Am I down on it?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a lot of people are.
I'm not, my problem is, and you're probably in the same boat, I'm too old. I wasn't a Nintendo guy.
Yeah, so I came at it as an adult.
Yeah, sure. So I think the people who are most excited are in their 30s. They were the ones who grew up with Mario and Zelda. Yeah. And for them,
I'm thinking
this is
more
a very
about the
exciting thing. The fact that it switches from
like
being,
in other words, I do think that Nintendo's Disney vibe is kind of cool, right? It's family friendly and all that stuff. And it's a little bit different from the Call of Duty stuff that I'm kind of into, obviously. But I respect it. Like, I think it's neat. I'm more concerned about I'm questioning the 300 pieces that you have to put together in different ways, like a transformer. I'm just wondering if that's a little too complex for people, and if there's too many moving parts there, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's sold out. I mean, nowadays everything sells out. That's
sure.
I don't know if that has to do with production.
Hey, the Lumia was sold out over Christmas, Leo.
Right.
I mean,
right, exactly. I don't think that measures sales. It just measures production. But anyway, I don't know. The only complaint I've heard about it from people who've had hands-on at the Nintendo event is that the removable controllers, when used in landscape mode, are too small. They're for children.
Yep. They seem small.
And then it's a very limited, where have we heard this before, a very limited set of launch titles.
Which is a little surprising, but maybe that's the problem for Nintendo these days. Yeah, like, I don't remember the Wii U having.
If you want Zelda, you know, it doesn't matter what else it has. If you want Mario Kart, it doesn't matter what else it has, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I say that it's the 30-somethings that are most excited about this, because they want to play their
They're two gens away from being dominant at anything. And
I mean, they're not even in the running. I mean, as you guys. All right. You know what I want to do? I want to go to the back of the book. Okay. So we're going to take a little break. Yes, Mary Jo says finally. It's over.
Did I just hear a beer crack open?
No, but it's a good idea.
It's 5 p.m. somewhere. It's almost 5 in your neck of the woods, actually. Mm-hmm. Before we do that, our show today brought to you by probably the single most important tool or utility in the fight against malware, particularly ransomware. I'm talking about a good backup, and the best is Carbonite. Carbonite, keep your business safe this year. Did I mention it was so funny? Well, funny for me, maybe not for them. The Los Angeles Valley College got bit by ransomware. And you know how that happens. You get a phishing email. Right now, 90% of all phishing emails have ransomware in them. This is like it. And it's from your boss or the dean, right? And you say, it says, open this immediately. I need these numbers right now, pronto. You open it. It's supposed to be an Excel worksheet. You open it up. It isn't. It's ransomware. And modern ransomware doesn't just encrypt all the documents on your computer. It goes out on the network. It looks at file shares. It goes everywhere. So it bit, I guess, so much of Los Angeles Valley College that the experts they brought in said, it's going to cost you more to fix this than to pay the ransomware. They paid $28,000 in ransom to get their machines unlocked. And it just kills me, because a good backup, the experts would have said, well, yeah, just restore from backup and you're okay. So what that tells you is they've got terrible IT. Don't let this happen to your business. Hackers can take control of your system. It'll cost you thousands to get it back. And frankly, I don't ever recommend paying, because most of the time you don't get the key. You just, they go, ha ha, and they walk away. Carbonite Business Backup gives you hope. It backs up your files to the cloud automatically as often as you need. It does versioning. In fact, read the white paper, carbonite.com, and under resources is a white paper on protecting your business from ransomware. Best practices. Read that. If you get hit by ransomware, no problem. You disinfect the computers. That's job one. Do that first. Then you restore from Carbonite, and you're back up and running. You could try it free. You don't have to take my word for it. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Windows. The free trial for home, for office, for Mac, for PC. No credit card required. It's very affordable. You pay once a year or 2 years or 3 years, so you set it and you forget it. And they don't measure how much data you're using. They even, if you're in a business and you want a business plan, they even have one of the business plans they have has a hardware device, so you get a local backup and a cloud backup. And if you use our offer code Windows during the free trial, you don't need a credit card, but do use the offer code Windows, because that way you'll get 2 free months if you decide it's right for you. Protect your business data today. Not tomorrow. It might be too late tomorrow. Go to carbonite.com and use the offer code Windows. Somebody in the chat room saying, it happened to one of our users. A backup had been done the night before to our server, so the downtime was a couple of hours. See? A good backup makes all the difference. We're talking Windows, back of the book time with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Let's kick things off with Paul and your tip of the week, sir.
I have two tips today. Both of these are awesome, if I do say so myself. Mm-hmm. I got contacted by Skype the other day, and they said, basically, they didn't say it this way, but basically what they said was, stop complaining, we fixed it. And if you go to the web version of Skype, which is what you see when you're on OneDrive.com or Outlook.com, there is now a switch to turn off notification sounds. And this has been my big complaint, because I like you, right? I mean, this is huge. And sure enough, this is a swit. It's just turn it off, and it perseveres across your account.
Finally.
Finally.
Yep. Wow. It's good news.
That is good news.
I haven't been able to say something nice about Skype in about 9 months.
So do you have to use the is either Skype app, UWP or desktop?
No, this is the web version.
Web Skype. Skype for the
web.
Yeah,
so in other words, like I might want to, like I use the web client for email, right? So what I want to do is use Outlook.com and have it just running in a web browser while I do other stuff. But I turn off Skype notification sounds. I don't need them. So on the desktop, that's easy to turn them off. But even if they're turned off on the desktop Skype, which is what I'm using, Skype is always running the web client.
Yes.
It makes these terrible sounds. It's like bleh, bleh. Yeah. Like it's the most awful sound. Anyway, now you can turn it off. So thank you. Thank you, Microsoft. The second tip is for all you Mac users in the audience. I've been looking at the Microsoft account recently and how you can use it across different device types. I've looked at it on Windows 10. I haven't written it yet, but I'm looking at how you use it on Android and iOS as well. I was under the impression that, you know, if you're familiar with macOS, you know, you can go to system preferences, you go to internet accounts, and Exchange is supported. That supports the commercial versions of Office 365. Google account supports, if you have a Google Apps account or whatever they call it, G Suite account or a Gmail account, whatever. And when you add your account there, among the things you can do with it is access your email through the Mail app, access your calendar through the Calendar app, and access your contacts list through the macOS contact application. But it hasn't worked with Outlook.com, and it hasn't worked with Hotmail. And I've, you know, it seems like a lot of people using a Mac would want to use it with Microsoft's consumer services. A couple people wrote in and said, you know, actually, this does work. But there were like these tricks you had to do. And so I spent literally a Saturday working on this to figure out one way that would always work. And actually, and this is kind of screwy, but it's in the article. And it's especially difficult if you have two-step verification turned on to get to the right dialog where you can enter the server information to make it actually connect to Outlook.com. You actually have to enter garbage values into two fields in the form. But if you do that, it will work every time.
Oh, come on.
I know it's crazy.
Come on.
It's crazy. I know. Because people were saying, I don't understand what your problem is. This is working fine for me. And I asked questions. So do you have two-step verification and, you know, on your account? No. Okay. So that's probably part of it. Part of it seems to be tied to the migration to the new version of Outlook.com, right, which is based on an Exchange infrastructure. Although, to be honest, this account should have always worked with Hotmail or Outlook.com because it's used EAS for, you know, several years now, but whatever. Anyway, the point is I actually have instructions that I believe will work for anybody. So if you use a Mac and you want to use those Mac OS apps that are built into the system, you know, Mail, Calendar, and Contacts, but also I think like Notes and Reminders with your Outlook.com account, which can be Hotmail, MSN, whatever, I believe I have instructions that will work for everyone. And it literally does involve putting garbage values into the field the first time you set it up. So there you go.
And is that a bug or a feature?
Yep. Well, there's no way to know, right? I mean, looking at this, I guess if you want to blame someone, right? Like, whose fault is this, right? It kind of has to be Apple's fault, but I guess in some ways it doesn't really matter. The point is, what you need to do is trigger a version of the dialog where you can enter manual server addresses. And in the Exchange configuration dialog, if you put in your real name, Paul Throd, and your Outlook.com email address, whatever it is, and your actual password, or if you have two-step verification turned on, an app password, if you do that, it will just fail. It won't work. If you put garbage values in as your email address and as that password, it will work every time. So, I mean, you'll have to go to a second dialogue to make it work, but it will then work. And it doesn't matter if you have two-step verification turned on. You'll have to use an app password, but it will still work. So, enjoy that. I know. And then since I'm on Apple stuff for some reason this week, this just happened. I haven't been able to write this up, but Microsoft just announced that Office Lens, which is that really handy application on mobile devices for taking pictures of, you know, like whiteboards and documents and transcribing them and so forth, is now finally available on the iPad. I don't know why it wasn't before, but now it is. It's right on the bottom of that announcement.
Plus kind stickers.
Well, that's for OneNote. There's a bunch of OneNote stuff that was announced as well. But I think this...
But really, you're burying the lead. You've got stickers.
Yeah. Well, I was going to save that for the pick next week. But
so lens lets you take a picture of what it, of
it's
text
in there.
And it,
yep.
I'm looking.
No, go back.
Here it is. You take a picture of it, and then it brings it in, and it even makes it into editable text.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's like a scan, you know, like a scanner type thing.
Yeah. Nice. Very. That's really. And is it pretty accurate?
Yeah, it's excellent. That's an excellent really app. Useful. It's been around for a long, long time, a couple of years at least, on other mobile platforms. So I don't know. It's been on the iPhone forever. I don't know why it took so long for the iPad, but it is available now.
Yeah.
You can scan business cards with it too, can't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I use that Andy. A lot. I use the Office Lens app on my Windows phone to do that.
Yeah.
Not. Actually, it's available it's available on other platforms.
I accepted that at face value.
Yeah, I know you did. You were very gullible.
I don't even understand how that's funny, but okay.
All right, time for our enterprise pick of the week from Mary Jo Foley.
Yes, my enterprise pick is an app that Microsoft has just added to Office 365 business plans. It's called Staff Hub. So Staff Hub is for people who need to manage their staffs, like kitchen staffs or restaurant staffs or any kind of staff, where people are known as deskless workers. You can use this app to develop, update, and manage shift schedules. So if you're somebody who runs a restaurant and you want to be able to communicate with your employees on their iOS or Android devices, you can use Staff Hub to just ping them and say, hey, can you switch with so-and-so for your shift? This is only available to Office 365 customers who have K1, E1, E3, or E5. That's it. No other Office 365 plans. But the good news is if you have one of those plans, you get this app for free. It's built in now to Office 365, and it's turned on by default. So if you don't want it, you have to go in and turn it off. But still, kind of a cool new type of departure for Microsoft with an app. And as we've been reporting on both Paul's site and my site, Office 365 just keeps getting more and more and more things added to it that if you have a subscription, you end up getting for free. So that's a nice little benefit.
Yay.
So that's enterprise pick.
Yay, yep. I'll take it. Actually, yep. You got two of them.
I do. So instead of doing a code name pick this week, I decided to do an enterprise pick. And I know Paul is all over this pick, so I just had to make it a separate pick.
Thank you, Mary Jo.
You're welcome. Today, Microsoft announced a new Linux distribution. Azure. This is a version of Linux I had never heard of. It's
Me
called
neither.
Clear Linux OS for Intel architecture. And it is a Linux distribution that's built specifically for cloud and data center environments for maximizing performance of Intel-based systems. So now Microsoft has a whole number of different Linux distributions that you can run on Azure. They've got Red Hat Linux. They've got Ubuntu, CentOS, Oracle Linux, SUSE, Linux Enterprise, and OpenSUSE. All of these are available in VMs from the Azure Marketplace now, along with Clear Linux OS. And I don't remember if we covered this already or mentioned this, but SUSE has published a tutorial for anyone who would like to run OpenSUSE Leap on the Windows subsystem for Linux on Windows 10. It's not an officially supported version of Linux like Ubuntu is on Windows 10, but SUSE actually published earlier this week a whole step-by-step tutorial for how you can run SUSE on Windows 10. So I know Paul really cared about both of those tips, so I wanted to make sure to call them out separately.
Good job.
So whatever it's worth, you're
yes.
wrong. No. I actually did write up the SUSE thing.
Oh, you did? Yeah?
Yeah. Huh. You know, in the same way that, like, you see a tsunami coming and there's nothing you can do about it, so you might as well just accept it.
You just have to go with it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I think you've both earned slogging through your respective partners' content. You've both earned a nice beer.
Yes.
And it's a commemorative beer. I like that.
It is. So, as I mentioned in our notes, Windows Weekly is a family show, so we try not to talk politics on the show.
Yes, because politics is so unfamily friendly.
Very unfamily friendly.
These days it kind of is.
Yeah.
It is.
Depends on the family, of course, but yeah.
But those great folks over at Surly Brewing in Minneapolis are brewing a beer that is going to be tapped this Friday for the inauguration called Thanks Obama.
Ah.
That is the name of the beer. It's a winter rye IPA. I have not had it, obviously, but it was suggested by Techno Squid this week on Twitter. Thanks, Techno Squid. And I was like, this has to be the beer pick of the week, given the inauguration and all. So whichever party you're with, you may want to have a beer on Friday for whatever your reasons.
Yeah. From Surly.
Yes, Surly Brewing. Very well-known craft beer brewers and very respected. So this should be a pretty good beer.
I think it's appropriate after 8 years to thank our exiting president.
And, agree.
You know, maybe
I also think we all need to get drunk. kind of a win-win.
A win-win. Mm. Well, at least we've got a Bruce Springsteen cover band playing at our
party.
Yeah.
Fellas and gals, the time has come, I'm sad to say, to say goodbye to the whole family, because Windows Weekly is...
Was that a Mousketeer reference?
Yes, it was.
Oh.
It was. Very good. See, we're of a different generation. No Mario for us. We're a Spinning Marty kind of guys. Windows Weekly show comes to us each Wednesday, miraculously through the airwaves, thanks to a variety of technologies, including Skype and your local television or radio station, who do not carry it. You can go to, it's 11 a.m. Pacific. It's 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's 1900 UTC. You can go to twit.tv/live. You could watch live on many apps. There's a Roku app that lets you watch live. There's 5 Apple TV apps that let you watch live. If you are here live, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. We'll crack open a case of bitters for you. And or something, I don't know. And if you can't watch live, on-demand audio and video is available too, as always, at twit.tv/ww. Oh, I forgot to mention, you can also now watch on YouTube, youtube.com/twit. We use YouTube Live, but you can also watch after the fact on the Windows Weekly channel and download a copy and subscribe with your favorite podcatcher. That way you won't miss an episode. We encourage you to do so. We have a merchandise store. We haven't yet put a Windows Weekly shirt up. We will. We just put the All About Android shirt up. It's twit.tv/store. This was by popular demand. It's not a big money maker or anything for us, but
right.
But people want to wear the, you know, show their team spirit. twit.tv/ I'm typing this in right now so I can show you the new All About Android. Yeah,
I'm
nice,
looking.
Huh? We've got many of
the twit.tv. Where is it?
It's twit.tv/store. The new Twit merch store.
What's our shirt going to look like?
I don't know. Weigh in, because I think
it's going to be a picture of you smacking me in the face.
I think yeah. Actually, we should make a slow down Eeyore shirt,
right?
Or something. Hold on, Eeyore. But we're slowly getting there. We brought back some of the designs from previous T-shirts and the new designs for the screensavers and All About Android, and soon, soon Windows Weekly. I promise. So that was just people were asking for that, so we've created a Twit merch store for people. I think that's all the business I need to do. I think we can now say goodbye to all our family. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com, thurrogood.com, where he and Brad Sams opine to the world about Microsoft products. They also, Paul also has a place for his books, leanpub.com. Leanpub.com. You can get the field guide to Windows 10 and a lot more there. Thank you, Paul. Mary Jo Foley is at allaboutmicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog, where she files all the time. Just type, type, type.
Day, night.
Day and
every,
night.
Every moment.
Still using that HP Spectre 13T?
Yes.
Love
I
it.
Still love it.
Isn't that great?
Yep. Yep.
It's funny. I will use other computers and I'll pick it up and my arm just goes up in the air because it's so light.
I know.
It's so light. It's like, wow.
So light.
It's exactly what you... It's the perfect notepad computer.
It really is.
It's all you need.
It pretty much is.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo. Thanks to all of you for joining us. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.